This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We have a podcast.
Diving deep into all things Texas, both on and off the field. Here's Sean Pendergast.
Welcome
to Utopia.
Hey, everybody. Welcome in. It is a mailbag edition of the Utopia Football Podcast. I'm Sean Pendergast, one half of Payne and Pendergast on Sports Radio 610, emanating to you live if you're watching on YouTube. Actually, not live. You're probably watching this recorded. I shouldn't say live. Coming to you from my studio here in my living room, high above the upper Kirby area. And got a mailbag to dig into here and a few other things. I'm recording this on Wednesday, early afternoon. So we are about 4 weeks out. It'll be 4 weeks out tomorrow from the NFL draft. Should be a fun 4 weeks as we ramp up to it. With all the pro days going on, the combine in the rearview mirror, 30 visits starting to be taken for various players, seeing some interesting names that have either come here to Houston or are heading here to Houston to visit with the Texans. So we're here for all of that today. Some activity in free agency, I think, not just with the Texans, but around the league that I think are captured in some of the emails that you guys have sent. And even excitement with the Astros. Opening day is tomorrow. We got the Cougs in the Sweet 16. The Rockets are back on a winning streak. They are one game into their next 9-game winning streak. Their previous one was snapped in a horrible game against the Nuggets on Sunday. So good time to be alive here in Houston right now. And a quick reminder on a few things before we dive into the topics at hand. Give the podcast a subscribe. I know I've been a little bit light on episodes here in the off season. It's because pretty much everything I've needed to capture, unless it's been something urgent like a Derek Stingley extension or a big trade or signing, we're kind of in a lull right now. So we may be in a stage, barring some guests, where I'm just doing one jumbo episode a week with a mailbag and some of the things going on. But subscribe to it when the draft gets a little bit closer, business picks up, and then certainly once camp gets here. We do 3 episodes a week during the season, if you're wondering. If you're new to the podcast, we do 3 episodes. I do 3 episodes a week. Big thanks to my producer, Jared Rowland, who gets the podcast out to all of you. But as far as talking on this podcast, I do 3 episodes a week during the season, typically 1 or 2 in the off season, depending on what the traffic calls for and what my schedule allows for. So give us a subscribe, give us a rate, give us a review. It costs nothing to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. Also costs nothing to email the podcast. If you want to get a question in, now's a good time. You know, we're leading up to the draft. Draft questions are good. questions about the offensive line. Really, really good. Certainly. And appreciate you guys. So there we go. HOUmailbag@gmail.com is the email address. HOUmailbag@gmail.com. Before we get into the mailbag, one other programming note. Texans general manager Nick Caserio will join me and Seth Payne on Sports Radio 610 next Thursday. So a week from tomorrow, that'll be about 3 weeks out, exactly 3 weeks out from the draft. He'll join us at 7:30 a.m. on Sports Radio 610. We'll get his thoughts on the offseason so far. The complete demolition of the offensive line and the subsequent build back up. That'll be a big topic. How some of the guys are doing here in the offseason, particularly guys like Jalen Petrie that are coming off of injury, or Blake Fisher, who I think needs to probably build out more of an NFL physique if he's going to be asked to do the things that we hope he's asked to do this coming season. Nick usually joins us for about 40 or 45 minutes uninterrupted, no commercials. So if you join us at 7:30, if you're a Texan fan, I would say that that's must listen. Those interviews have gotten really good. It feels like I've gotten better and better each year that Nick has come on with us. And I think he's become more comfortable through the year, certainly, and more forthcoming. And with the team being better, that always helps. People like hearing from the GM when the team is really, really good. People also like hearing from the GM when the team is really, really bad, but they get angry with the GM when they do that. I want to hear from this guy so I can get angry. So it'll be interesting. I mean, that's probably been the one either blind spot or Achilles heel so far during Nick's tenure, which I count as starting after the 2021 season at earliest. I hold zero from the 2021 season for or against Nick Caserio. He inherited the worst situation of any GM in the history of the NFL. I feel strongly about that. My evaluation didn't really start until we got to 2022. And then once you get to D'Amico Ryans and C.J. Stroud in the building, now you can really start to see the fruits of roster construction. But the one blind spot, or the one area, clearly, that has not been addressed, or was addressed but not correctly, was the offensive line. Otherwise, they wouldn't be doing all the things they're doing right now with the offensive line. So that'll be a topic for sure. What they did or didn't do in free agency. Stephon Diggs, which is, I believe, the first question I have in the mailbag, is a Stephon Diggs question. That just felt like the price of poker was a little too high. So we'll get to that in just a second. But anyways, I say all that to say Nick Caserio will be on with me and Seth a week from tomorrow. April 3rd, Thursday, 7:30 a.m., Sports Radio 610, in the Odyssey app on your phone. Be there. And you can watch on YouTube and Twitch as well. We have those interviews. Now, Nick doesn't have a camera on, and we're working on that. But he will be like this voice of God bellowing down as you watch me and Seth sit there and listen and worship at the altar of Caserio. All right, let's get into the mailbag. Off the top of my head, or even as I was making notes beforehand, I can't think of anything Texans-related that we haven't addressed either on last week's podcast or that isn't captured in the mailbag here. We've kind of hit a lull in free agency. I guess the only thing that's really happened is Trent Brown signed a one-year, $3 million deal. I guess we can touch on that. That just feels like a camp body to me. Anything 1 year, $2 or $3 million feels like somebody who's going to be fighting for a roster spot. Makes a lot of sense. Veteran guy who's played some good football. There's familiarity with Trent Brown. At various times, he's been in the same building in New England with Nick Caserio, Nick Caley, the offensive coordinator, and Cole Popovich, the offensive line coach. So they've got a good grasp on what he's about, certainly as a teammate or a player. And then physically, they obviously have an idea of what he's about, but he's aging. He's older. He's missed a lot of games due to injury over the last few years. If he can stay healthy in training camp and becomes a swing tackle for you, that's probably the ceiling. I don't see him being one of the starters right now. I'm trying to remember if we have a question in the mailbag about what would the starting offensive line be if it were to, you know, if they had to play a game tomorrow. So at the risk of cannibalizing a question in the mailbag, I would say that I think there's a 90% chance. And again, this is assuming that everybody makes it through training camp healthy. I would say 90% chance left tackle is Cam Robinson. So I'll put him there. I would say that, boy, I think they really want Blake Fisher to be the right tackle, but I could see where Titus is the right tackle keep in mind they're going to draft somebody on the offensive line, maybe multiple guys that are going to compete for spots. None of them are going to be handed a spot, I don't think, but compete for spots on the offensive line. I'm going to go Robinson left tackle, Titus Howard left guard, Jarrett Patterson center, Lakin Tomlinson right guard, and Blake Fisher right tackle. Knowing full well I could get maybe two of those right or all five. That's my bracketology right now for you. You know bracketology with Joe Lunardi on ESPN, where like every week during this college basketball season, he has like, if we played the tournament tomorrow, this is what the bracket would look like. That's what we're going to be doing with this offensive line until probably until training camp, until we see who the ones are that come out. That'll be one of the most intriguing things to see at Texans training camp, the very first practice. Who are the ones? Because it's not just talking about which guys. For some of these guys, it's what position are they going to be playing. I feel pretty comfortable saying Titus Howard is going to be part of that first five that come out there at the beginning of training camp. I have zero comfort over what position to put him in. I think similarly, maybe not as drastic a coin flip as right tackle and left guard in terms of the how different the two positions are, but I could see like someone like Lakin Tomlinson. Is he right guard? Is he left guard? What do they need? You know, Jarrett Patterson, is he a guard or a center? Juice Scruggs, is he a guard or a center? So the only one I feel, it's really weird to say this, Laremy Tunsil was the only really good offensive lineman for the team last year. Everybody else, I felt it'd be up for grabs going into this season. They trade away Laremy Tunsil. They pick up a bunch of dudes. They shed a bunch of dudes like Shaq Mason and Kenyon Green. And now here we are back at square one. And the only one I feel really strongly about is left tackle. It's just not Laremy Tunsil. It's Cam Robinson, a cheaper version of Laremy Tunsil. So I don't know if I cannibalized the question out of the mailbag or not. We've got a bunch of questions, but as long as I was on the topic, I figured that's what I would share with you. That's what I feel it is right now with zero intel, by the way. Nobody's told me anything about what they think or who's what along the offensive line. All right, so let's get into the mailbag. Again, let's give you guys the email address. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see it at the bottom of the screen, houmailbag@gmail.com. HOU mailbag. Someday you'll be able to drag your cursor there, click it, and it'll go straight to opening up an email for you. There's probably a way to do that. But I have a very, very, very thin technical staff. It's me. So there you go. Subscribe, rate, and review. There you can see that at the bottom too. All right, mailbag. Here we go. Billy is a new emailer to the show. Billy, I appreciate you. Should the Texans have been in the Stephon Diggs market, knowing what he got from New England? Okay, so for those who don't know, Stephon Diggs signs with the New England Patriots. He visited them last week. The visit went well. They made it sound like it was a much more slow burn to get him to sign eventually than it ended up being. The reports at the time were, hey, this is just the getting to know you meeting and just seeing how your knee is. And then next thing you know, the couple's married, you know? It's like they went on a first date. You know, I want to double check and, you know, make sure that that mole, you know, that the sore on your face isn't herpes. That kind of, that's the ACL in this analogy. I know that'd be an awkward first date to kind of reach across and look and go, all right, is that herpes on your face? But that's kind of what this was. It's like they went on a first date. The Patriots wanted to make sure that the cold sore on Stephon Diggs' face isn't herpes. And once they found out it wasn't herpes, boy, they married quick and expensively. 3 years, $69 million, $26 million guaranteed is the key. And so the 3 years, $69 million is way inflated. Like that makes it feel like a much bigger deal than it is. $26 million guaranteed out of a total contract of $69 million is well below the percentage that we've been seeing in terms of the overall guarantee as a component of the contract. So, but for purposes of reporting, the average annual value is $23 million. Nico Collins is $24 million. Wow, Nico looks like a bargain, and it's true. He does. I think that would have been a terrible signing for the Texans, given where they are cap-wise and given the resources they have to go find a wide receiver too. You know, there's still some on the market that are cheaper than that. They've got the 25th overall pick and the 59th over or 58th overall pick where they can get a receiver as well. That would have been, even with just, forget about the 3 years, $69 million, just look at the guaranteed money, the $26 million. That's too expensive a pool for the Texans to play in right now where they are cap-wise and where Diggs is injury-wise. Look, the Patriots need a number one wide receiver. I don't know if Diggs is a number one anymore, but he's their number one now. They improved at receiver. They were a shitty wide receiver group. And number two, New England has all kinds of cap space to play with this offseason. Vrabel's trying to get that thing turned around quick they think they can do it with Drake May. I think their best case is that they compete for a wild card this season. They're not going to catch the Bills in that division, I don't think. But I do think it's possible in a conference where seven teams make the playoffs that the Patriots, with all the moves they made on defense, could make the postseason. I'll say this, and I know the Dolphins are in that division. If I had to pick one non-Bills team out of that division to make the postseason, I'd pick the Patriots. With Vrabel as the coach, with all the moves they made on defense, and with Drake May heading into year two, I mean, 9-8 gets you in the conversation. So I like the move for the Patriots. I wouldn't have done that at all if I were the Texans. I do think this is a good look for the Texans in that clearly Stephon Diggs' time as a Texan, both I would say in training camp when he was voted a captain, and during the season where he proved to still be effective but maybe not explosive. I would say overall his time in Houston was good for the stock on Stephon Diggs. I would say that there was a cleansing effect of his image in Houston compared to what he was thought of leaving Buffalo and what we heard people warning Houston about when they went and got Diggs. I think the Texans did a really good job of vetting Stephon Diggs to see if he was the right guy to have in the building. I think he was. I think he tore his ACL, and that's it. You gave up a second-round pick and paid $22 million for eight games. It's not a great investment, but the Texans don't control who gets torn ACLs. So that trade ended up being a bad trade, but it wasn't because the philosophy of the trade. It wasn't because the thinking of the general manager and head coach was wrong. It was just bad luck. So, in my opinion, I think it's a good signing for the Patriots. I think it would have been a bad signing for the Texans based solely on price tag. Okay, Justin in Kingwood has a couple emails here. Now that we lost Tank Dell for this season and different variables we did not know last offseason, what do you think Caserio thinks about his decision to restructure the contract for Diggs when he came on and basically wiped out the remaining years, what we could have gotten from him? Caserio's obviously made some good moves. There's been a couple that could have been handled differently. Is that going into his do not replicate again file? I think if it were done all over again, obviously if you knew there was going to be an ACL tear, you don't do the Diggs trade. But not knowing injury luck, I think if Nick Caserio were faced with the same opportunity this year that he was last year to get Stephon Diggs for a second round pick, and Diggs was sitting, the same need exists, if not more acute now than it was a year ago, because at least a year ago, we knew that Tank Dell was going to be coming back healthy. This year, it's Nico Collins. They traded for Christian Kirk. So maybe that affects the calculus a little bit, Christian Kirk. Let's pretend they didn't make the Kirk trade. I think Nick would do that again. I think he'd trade a two for Stephon Diggs and do the restructure again for $22 million. There's not a lot about Nick Caserio where he goes looking back at things and regrets moves that he made. If they make sense in the moment and you think you're going to be better by doing it and it's good for the team, he'll make the deal. You know, as far as the structuring of it goes, yeah, I mean, they got hit with a $6 million cap hit last year. They're taking the other $16 million this year because they pushed some of that into voidable years when they redid Diggs' deal. I think you do the whole thing over again. I do. Again, if they were assuming you don't know he's going to get hurt. Justin has another question. You mentioned in last week's mailbag, Stingley's contract at $30 million annually kicks in a couple of years. Can you explain how the contracts work when we're signing extensions? I read somewhere, maybe heard it on here, that Caserio is basically using future money to lock in contract extensions now. What are the implications of that? Yeah, the voidable years is what you're talking about. I don't know how podcast or radio friendly the topic is, but NFL teams can, a lot of them do this, and they're doing it more and more, not even with big contracts, but even with lesser contracts, you can tack on to the end of a deal dummy years and essentially spread some of the bonus money out, spread some of the money out into those voidable years. The thing that, you know, what happens, as we learned with Diggs, is that as soon as that guy's not on the team anymore, any money you've got pushed into future years gets accelerated into the current year's cap. And there's stuff you can do to split up that dead money hit by making the cut after June 1st. And things like that. There's a lot of things you can do. I would just say this about the way the Texans are operating. First, with the Stingley contract, he still had this coming season and next season, his fifth-year option season, locked in. So the three-year extension for $30 million a year doesn't kick in until 2027. So the sum total of all of it is that over the course of the next 5 years, the 2 years he was under contract already, plus the 3 years that start up in 27, The sum total is that he's averaging about $22 million a year over the next 5 years, which is a good, that's a good deal for the Texans and for Derek Stingley Jr. The other great thing for Stingley is practically all of the money he's getting is guaranteed. So there's no funny money like this Diggs contract that Diggs just signed. He's not going to see a dime of that money that's in his contract for 2027. He won't. He's going to be an aging player whose production is going down. They ain't paying him $23 or $24 million a couple of years from now. But that money's non-guaranteed. So, so that's how the Stingley deal works. You know, the voidable years thing, again, more and more teams are doing that. The Texans are going to be doing it more and more with Will Anderson eligible for an extension next year, C.J. Stroud eligible for an extension next year. What I would say, if you're a Texan fan and you're looking at all this money flying out, now you're hearing me talk about voidable years, which is basically robbing from future year cap to allow to pay guys more this year, is that Nick Caserio and his team are not just doing this blind. They are not Bill O'Brien. Bill O'Brien just spent a bunch of money and had a bunch of cap space and didn't give a fuck. At least that's what it looked like. I think Nick is a pretty good negotiator. I do think that he and his cap team, if he has one, I don't know if it's a team or one person, like the Texans, Texans had Chris Olsen, who was their cap guy for years, one of the best. I think Nick makes a move like Stingley, knowing full well what the future ramifications are and knowing that the cap is going to go up each year. Like, I don't think any of this is getting done. And then Nick is staying up awake at night, wondering where the money is going to come from under the cap. These are all things, and these are all their own guys. So they've been able to plan for this for a while now. So I don't worry about any of the deals they're doing. I feel like under Nick Caserio, there's always going to be a solution to find some space to make little moves that you need to make. Now, I don't know if he's ever going to be in the market for big splashy moves ever. Like Daniil, I think maybe he will if it's a two-year deal like Daniil Hunter, but I think Nick operates a lot like the Astros do and Jim Crane. Like if Jim Crane were to hire Nick Caserio as a GM, I think Nick would fit in as, you know, and he knows his baseball. I'm being somewhat hypothetical here. Like, Nick's not ready to be a baseball GM, but I'm just talking about philosophically what he does, the way he handles things is a lot like the way the Astros do. But all of a sudden, Jim Crane bought the Texans. That's probably a better example. I don't think that's happening either, but it's easier for a guy to buy a team and run it than it is for a GM to leave to go to a completely other sport. I think if Jim Crane were to buy the Texans, I think Nick Caserio would be his kind of GM. Short-term deals, take care of your own, take care of them early before it gets too pricey, that kind of thing. I know the two sports function differently with the way team control works and free agency works, but I think Nick Caserio's way of managing and constructing a roster and, more importantly, managing a budget fit Jim Crane perfectly. So, all right, next one. Thank you, Justin, for both of those. I think I may have said Jason at one point. If I did, Justin, I apologize. But Justin and Kingwood, of course. Ned from Pecan Grove. Shout out to Pecan Grove. Johnny Harris's home neighborhood. All right. Which Texans are you most intrigued? Excuse me, I had to cough. Which Texans are you most intrigued to see come back for training camp like they went through puberty in the offseason, i.e. body type changes? Now, this is my kind of question. Not because I look at guys' bodies at training camp. Get your head out of the gutter. I mean, I do, but for football purposes. Jeez. I would say the big ones would be there. It's always either younger guys who have to put on weight, or it's older guys who may have to come in better shape. I would say that two of them are guys that I think are competing with each other for the same spot at right tackle. I'm interested to see Blake Fisher, and that'll be one of the things. Sorry, man, this cough. That'll be one of the things I ask Nick about next week, is just how is Blake Fisher's offseason going? Because I do think he needs to get a little bit more man strength. I think he needs to bulk up a little bit more. Conversely, I think Titus Howard needs to come in better shape than he did last year. I think Titus Howard knows this. Those are two big ones. Damian Pierce's body type is always an interesting one every year, because some years he comes in super slender. Some he came in as a rookie, kind of bulked up. He had his best year bulked up, and he still hasn't bulked back up to that point again. So I would say that's a good one. This isn't a body type one, but throughout the year, I'm just going to be anxious to hear what the updates are with Tank Dell's knee. That'll be one of the bigger stories going off to the side with this team all year is Tank's recovery. It's pretty clear. Nobody's counting on Tank this year. It's just a killer, man. When you think of what he brought to that offense, just an absolute killer. And then Kalen Bullock would probably be one. Kalen functioned pretty well with the physique that he has. I don't know that he's got a frame where you're able to put on a whole lot more. He's got those skinny little chicken legs. But I would say he's definitely one. That's probably about it. You know, there's nobody else I can think of on the offensive line. Tight end, no. Wide receiver, running. No, that's about it. Maybe see, you know, CJ a little, you know, thicker in the waist and hips and things like that. You know, we hear so much about the necessity for lower body strength with quarterbacks. So maybe there. But that's about it. Thanks, Ned, for that very awkward question. I appreciate it. Bobby emails in. It's Bobby from the Hill Country. I'm wondering if it's as common on other NFL teams as a Texan on what they're doing with voidable years. It seems Nick has a lot of restructured deals with voidable years. Man, y'all are in contract nerd mode today. What the fuck is going on? I mean, I'm a big contract nerd, and I kind of steer away from it because I generally don't think people are into it that much, but at least you emailers are today. I think it's pretty common. Like, I'm not on every team's spot rack. I saw a list when the Eagles won the Super Bowl, voidable years became a big topic because they've literally got multiple hundreds of millions of dollars jammed into future voidable years that are floating off the cap grid right now that are someday going to come back to bite them. You pay the piper at some point with all of these. Every dollar you spend is going to hit you in the cap. It's just a matter of when. And the Eagles have shoved so much of it way into the future, but they won a Super Bowl. You win a Super Bowl, you are, by my rule, allowed to, at some point in the future, undergo like four straight years of losing football because you can't put a team together because your voidable years are hitting you right in the salary cap mouth. I saw a list of the teams that use the most money in voidable years and did not see the Texans on that list. It was like the top seven or eight. The Eagles were so far out in front of everybody else. So I'm not too worried about it. It's one of those things, like if everybody's doing it, then there's really no advantage or disadvantage out there if everybody's doing it. It all just comes back to being able to evaluate. The big thing, and this is what makes me confident in Caserio and D'Amico Ryans, I think they are generally very good at evaluating young talent. I do. I think they've had more young talent work out for them from day one of the draft through day three of the draft than most have. And where it's not working out a little bit right now is because of injuries like Tank Dell. You know, if I count Tank as a guy, that was a good evaluation. They just had bad injury luck with him. So I'm confident in their ability to evaluate young talent, and that's always going to be the cheat code. Do you get the most bang for your buck out of your rookie classes when you bring them in? I think last year the Texans had two high functioning secondary guys, their starting right tackle at the end of the year, and Cade Stover, who until the very end of the year was a backup tight end who got in and did some good things. That's a really good draft class. You know, you get four guys that are contributors from week one that are, you know, worth it. I know Blake Fisher struggled a little bit and whatever. JR and Spicewood. Hey, Sean, love everything you put out, sir. Thank you. Wish my wife would love it as much when I put out. Just kidding. She listens to the podcast. Love everything you put out, sir. Question for you. Who is the best football player on the current Texans roster? All caps, football player. Appreciate your time as always. Any update on Utopia swag? I have had so little time to put swag together for Utopia. That's my apologies, JR. I'm loaded with events for like the next 2 months, but they pay. That's the thing. So I got all my side hustles going right now. You know what I mean? So I haven't had time to do the Utopia swag because it takes a little bit for the swag before you're making money doing it. But it's not, it's on the big whiteboard in my spare bedroom over there. Best football player on the current Houston Texans roster is Derek Stingley Jr. He's the best player on the roster right now. The most valuable player is CJ Stroud because of the position that he plays. But Derek Stingley Jr. is the best football player on this roster. If you were to have a skills competition, if you were to have a decathlon of some sort, and then just throw in the fact like who's put more out on film over the last year, because the best football players is to me, I'm basing it on the 2024 season. So I would say And this is totally off the top of my head. Derek Stingley Jr. is number one for me. I would say that Daniil Hunter is number two for me. Will Anderson Jr. is number three for me. Nico Collins is number four for me. And then I'll put CJ Stroud at number five. I don't think CJ Stroud had nearly as bad a season as everybody wants to out there in the national media want to say he had last year. I don't think the regression was nearly as much as people think when it comes to him being a football player. I think a lot of it was what was thrust upon him. That was easier to do than I would have liked. Texans have a lot of good football players. But it's so easy when you just eliminate entire position groups. Like, all right, well, no tight ends, no offensive linemen, no running backs not named Joe Mixon, no wide receivers not named Nico. There's only three guys on offense that are in this conversation, and it's Nico, Mixon, and CJ Stroud. And then defensively, just look at the guys who were in the conversation for the Pro Bowl. I would say of the guys, like, who's the best player outside, like that next layer, like the non-guys who haven't been to a Pro Bowl? Because all the guys I just named have been to or named to a Pro Bowl. I would say the best non-Pro Bowl player on the Houston Texans. Tank, if Tank were healthy, it might have been Tank, but he's not healthy, so I can't put him there. I would say that it's probably Azeez Al-Shaair, Kamari Lassiter, or maybe C.J. Gardner-Johnson. It's definitely somebody on the defensive side of the football, for sure. For sure, for sure. Christian Kirk, maybe, but no, I don't know. The last couple of years, he's been banged up, so it's hard to say. All right, appreciate that. Let's keep it moving. I love that. Who's the best football player? I feel like there should be a growl. Grr, football player. All right, BK. BK has a bunch of stuff in here that I'm just going to react to as he says them. Dear Sean T. Pendergast, keeper of the Seth and special breaking sports news correspondent for Lizards. I was at Lizards yesterday. Of course, I can say that almost any day. It's good to be smart. Even that Cornell guy you hang out with isn't dumb. The Texans have done really smart things in no particular order. Extending scariest human in the NFL, Daniil Hunter. I agree. Smart. That's something Seth and I were clamoring for. Signing Nico Collins to a very affordable wide receiver deal. The Nico Collins deal. That's how good a deal you know the Nico deal is. He missed 5.5 games last year, and people are still saying what an amazing deal it is, you know, with a hamstring injury, which is scary as hell. Making Stingley a Texan for the next 5 years. I agree. Very smart. You know, again, the Nico and Stingley things, though, we got to be mindful of the injury factor. BK goes on to say, I think the smartest thing they've done is turning the offensive line room upside down. I agree. That had to be done. And you guys know my feeling, if you listen to this podcast, that my gut feeling when Laremy Tunsil was traded was liberation, was freedom from underneath the iron thumb of Laremy Tunsil's laissez-faire casual attitude pervasively spreading throughout the offensive line room. I agree. That was a very smart thing they did, BK. The Astros have done a really smart thing with the Kyle Tucker trade. I agree with that. We've actually got a later question about Cam Smith, so I'm going to save Cam Smith thoughts for that last question. BK's a big Cougs fan. We've got some Cougs thoughts in here. I feel bad that the Cougs are basically have a road game for the Sweet 16. They really have road games for both Sweet 16 or both the Sweet 16 and the Elite 8. Because if they're able to beat Purdue, and I think they will, even though the game's in Indy, it's a short drive for Kentucky or Tennessee to get there and play. So there, and I don't know how well Cougs travel. If you're a Coug who's traveling, you're like, they travel fine, I'm going. I get it, you're traveling, but they generally don't travel as well as some of these other fan bases. And these SEC people are nuts. They'll go anywhere. I know Purdue's in the Big Ten. They're pretty nuts too. Well, Purdue, they can go to the game and be, it's a 9 o'clock tip. They can go to the game and still get to the bar back in their hometown in West Lafayette for last call. Hopefully drinking while sobbing tears of extreme sadness. Thanks to Kelvin Sampson. All right. I'm going to keep it moving, BK, just because this is a long email. You do call John Runyon a punk-ass bitch at the end, and I always like that. That's a good tradition. All right, last one. This is from Frank. Frank says, hey, Sean, love the podcast. You said that you'll take Astro questions on the podcast. I did say that. I'll talk about anything. I don't care. It's a Texans podcast, but whatever. I can. It's my podcast. I can talk about it. Ain't like they cut me a Joe Rogan check to do this podcast. I'll talk about what I damn well want to talk about. All right. You said you'll take Astro questions. So what are your thoughts on Cam Smith making the team and thoughts on the way the team announced it? Felt a little awkward to me. Yeah, I think, Frank, you and I are largely on the same page. Super excited Cam Smith is on the team. Don't want to hear from the people who are like, service time. I can't believe they gave up an extra year of arbitration for Cam Smith. Here's the thing about that, about the service time. And I'll get into the emotional part and him making the team. And the video, I'm sure, is what you're referring to, where it got announced in front of the team that he had made the team. Here's the thing about manipulating service time. Typically, teams that manipulate service time of top prospects, and it's just top prospects we're talking about, they're not a top prospect. Who the fuck cares what their service time is or how long you have team control over them? This has been done when we're talking about guys like Springer and Correa and Bregman and Tucker, guys like that through the years. Think about when those guys had their service time manipulated with. For the first few guys, it was when the team was still shitty. You didn't need them on the team because the team wasn't all that great to begin with, right? Or wasn't a World Series contender, put it that way. So you're either manipulating service time when you're in the building phase, or you're manipulating service time when you are completely built out and you're a title contender and you don't need those guys on the team. They didn't have to rush Kyle Tucker up because they didn't need Kyle Tucker to win or get to a World Series. So think about this team now. This team is all hands on deck. They're in a dogfight just to win the division. If you look at the odds, it's a dead heat between the Astros, the Rangers, and the Mariners in any permutation of those three teams. It's a dogfight with those three teams. They need the best guys out there in the organization every day or close to every day to win baseball games. They need Cam Smith in this lineup. If what they saw in spring training is an indicator, a harbinger, and I don't expect his OPS to be 1300 or whatever it was, but if he can prove to be a capable, above average, as a rookie, above average, I hope he's a superstar someday, but as a rookie, above average right fielder, that's a whole lot better than what they were going to be trotting out there with Chaz McCormick. So from that standpoint, it makes perfect sense to me, and I'm getting more and more tired of the service time people who are like, no, extra year of arbitration, which, by the way, if he's really good, he's also going to be super expensive anyways on a one-year deal. So whatever. So that's how I feel. I'm glad he made the team. It makes sense that he made the team. DiCenzo making the team, too, is very interesting because that's another player who had a great spring, who Joe Espada and Dana Brown both said that we want to make sure both these guys, Cam Smith and DiCenzo, are getting every day at bats. Well, they're both on the team now. So what do we do? Does this mean that it leaves an opening for Jose Altuve to move back to second base, maybe with a shorter leash for Altuve? I don't know, but it makes the roster juggling. It makes just the mere picture of the everyday lineup that you see Brian McTaggart put up on Twitter every day a thing, right? That turns into a thing every day with the way this team is put together. And I'm here for it. I'm not mad about it or anything like that. They got a lot of guys that can play a lot of positions. Joe Espada has an interesting chore in front of him in terms of figuring out day to day what the best lineup is. As far as the video that got put out with Cam Smith, getting him learning that he made the team in a video in front of the entire team in the clubhouse, like the whole team sitting in the clubhouse on couches by their lockers, with all eyes on Joe Espada at the front of the room. And Joe Espada essentially announces that Cam Smith has made the team. And then in walks Cam Smith's family, his mom, his dad, his grandmother, all walk into the room, walk over to Cam, give a huge emotional hug. I mean, you can tell Cam is an emotional kid. Lot of tears streamed, tears of joy. Yesterday. My only glance, and I thought it was cool. Like the coolest part of it was the emotion between Cam and his family, because that was genuine. That was real. That's how they felt. And I think it's great. I've just never seen this before. Every conversation I've ever heard about with baseball players finding out they made the team was a guy getting called into the manager's office, sitting down, wondering if he got cut or made the team, and then finding out he made the team. And then on and on we go. I've never seen it made into content before. Taking it a step further, I've never seen it made into content where it's been done in front of a room full of guys whose first foray into the major leagues was never, I'm assuming the other 25 guys in that room that were part of the Astros or however many guys were in there, never had their announcement they made the team made a big deal of on social media. So I do wonder with some of the veteran guys if there was a little bit of eye rolling going on. I would guess that maybe not outwardly, but inwardly there was. It sure was awkward when nobody was clapping for the whole thing. Eventually, somebody started to clap. That would have been the only part I would ask that they make contrived, is if they're going to do this, maybe smarten up the players ahead of time and say, hey, we're going to do this. It's a big deal. Cam's making the team and his family. I would write it off as his family happens to be in town, as opposed to the team saying, hey, we need to make a big deal out of our new star player. If they were doing it to try to promote Cam Smith, and God forbid, if I've said Cam Ward or Cam Robinson during this little segment of the podcast, apologies. But if they were doing this to promote Cam Smith, then I don't think it's a great move. He still has to actually step into the batter's box against major league pitching. I understand his importance to the organization, and I don't think this is something that the kid is going to let go to his head. He seems like an amazing, amazing person, very grounded, and I'm super happy for him. I just don't know that that was the move. I'm not angry about it, but if you're asking me, if I were the manager of the Astros, would I have gone through that song and dance yesterday? I would not have. I wouldn't have done it. Would have called into my office, told him he made the team, and immediately called Brian McTaggart and said, hey, Cam Smith made the team. I'll let you break this news. Because I like Tags out of all the people that could potentially break this news. Tags is my favorite. So, that's how I feel about that. And that's all I got to say about that. All right, if you want to email me, houmailbag@gmail.com. That is the email address right there at the bottom of the screen. Give us a subscribe. Give us a rate. Give us a review. I'm headed to the Golden Nugget on Friday, so this will probably be a one-episode week. Nick Caserio is on next week on Sports Radio 610 with me and Seth Payne, April 3rd, 7:30 a.m. So we'll probably have a mailbag on Wednesday, and then maybe I'll do a Caserio interview follow-up on Friday. Get some draft guests in here along the way during the month of April as well. The calendar flip into April is a big thing to trigger a lot of, you know, draft related podcast stuff. We're coming up on 3 years, I think, that I've been doing this thing. First with McLean and solo for the last year and a half or so. I wonder how many episodes I have. Wow. I don't think about it. I enjoy doing it. All right. We're done. We're out of time. Wow. 40 minutes. I always say these things are good. I tell myself like 25 minutes and then we're out of here. And then 40 minutes later, I'm still sitting here yapping with you guys. All right, we're done. Big thanks to Jared Rowland for getting you guys the podcast. We'll see you next week. Go Cougs, go Stros, go Rockets, go you, everybody. Go be the best version of yourself today for me. See ya.